Welcome to Today on Broadway for Tuesday, January 10th, 2017. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am Broadway stars James Marino.
James, I apologize if I'm a little distracted. I'm trying to both record this podcast episode and watch the national championship college football game between two teams that I absolutely hate. It's a little bit of schadenfreude after Ohio State got destroyed in the semifinals, but, you know, whatever.
Again, we talk about the Venn diagram between maybe college football and musical theater. There is a little bit of overlap. I'm thinking like Rob Evan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Rob Evan played Jekyll and Hyde in University of Georgia football player.
Yeah, Shuler Hensley was a baseball player at the University of Georgia. So there are some. There's a lot of people. I mean, you know, Lin-Manuel Miranda often tweets about sports. You know, our friend Patty Murin is a big sports fan. So there's definitely sports fans out there, but people who are as invested in both as I am admittedly tend to be, that we're few and far between. We're a special breed of dork.
All right, dork, let's get on to the last week's Broadway grosses.
All right, James, this was probably inevitable after the record week that Broadway had between Christmas and New Year's, but last week's Broadway grosses had a precipitous drop of over $20 million. However, before any fans freak out and think that Broadway is dead and no one's ever coming and they're going to have to close theaters, remember that in addition to all of the holiday tourists that have gone back home, most shows played an extra performance, or nine extra performances in the case of The Illusionists, which gave that special holiday week an extra bump that it wouldn't normally have had. And while nearly every show was in the red week to week, half of the shows on the boards last week actually made over $1 million. So it was actually a pretty strong week, all things considered. Only four shows actually saw week-to-week increases. One was Jitney, which went from four to seven performances in previews last week. And the other three were all shows that closed on Sunday. La Liaison d'Anjou, The Encounter, and The Color Purple. Falsettos was missing from that list mainly because they only did seven performances as opposed to the eight they had done the week before. But they only dropped $50,000. So in terms of grosses per performance, they actually did increase. Of course, Hamilton led the way with $2,456,491, followed by The Lion King at about $2,046,000. In the seven-figure club were Wicked, Aladdin, Book of Mormon, Jersey Boys, Paramore, Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812, The Color Purple, The Phantom of the Opera, School of Rock, Dear Evan Hansen, Cats, and The Front Page. Speaking of which, last week, that star-studded revival became the first show of the 2016-2017 season to officially recoup. The front page returned its entire $4.875 million investment in just 15 playing weeks and will continue to run through January 29th. Other than Jitney, which only played seven performances, In Transit was the lowest grossing show at just over $311K. Apologize about that. That was down over six figures from the previous holiday week. Also in grosses news, yesterday the national tour of Wicked announced that in the week between Christmas and New Year's, they pulled in $3,325,200 during a nine-performance week at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C., breaking the national tour ring record, which Wicked had also previously held. During the same week, the Broadway production also eclipsed $3 million, so that was a pretty good week to be a witch. Also, fresh off of that record-setting run, the tour will be setting up shop for a three-week run down here in Orlando at the Dr. Phillips Center for the Performing Arts on Wednesday, and I will have a review on Friday's episode after I get home from the press night on Thursday, so check out Today on Broadway on Friday to hear everything that I think about Jessica Vosk and Andy Mientis and everybody else on the tour from Wicked.
Wow, that makes me green with envy.
But ching, I wish I had my little sound effects Foley kit, because that definitely deserved a rim shot.
All right, what's up in the show and casting news?
Well, James, this one is right up your alley, and so I'm going to ask you not to squeal with delight. But yesterday, Yesterday, the Lincoln Center Theater announced that Lena Hall and Marissa Tomei would lead the cast in Sarah Ruhl's new play. Sarah Ruhl's new play, How to Transcend a Happy Marriage, which will be directed by the great Rebecca Taichman. The show begins performances on February 23rd and will officially open on March 20th at the Mitzi Newhouse Theater. James, if the words Lena and Hall weren't enough to get you excited about this production, the show description probably will. The play is described thusly: at a dinner party in the... Sorry, let me say that again, James. I apologize. I'm excited for you, and I'm stumbling over my own words. At a dinner party in the wilds of New Jersey, two married couples discuss a younger acquaintance, a polyamorous woman who also hunts her own meat. That's the character played by Lena Hall. Fascinated, they invite this mysterious woman and her two live-in boyfriends to a New Year's Eve party, which alters the course of their lives. Okay, James, go ahead and squeal if you want. You're already emailing the press rep to make sure you can get press tickets for this one.
Lisa Goldberg. Hi, Lisa. This is James Marino.
Yes. I'll get in touch with Lisa after this. Let you know that you want to do a backstage interview as much as humanly possible.
All right. So Wayne Brady is confirmed as Chicago's new Aaron Burr.
Yeah, James. Yesterday we talked about the unconfirmed reports coming from Chicago that Emmy winner Wayne Brady would be taking over the role of Aaron Burr in the second city production when Joshua Henry heads out for the 8-year tour stop in San Francisco. Well, those reports are no longer unconfirmed as producer Jeffrey Seller announced yesterday that Brady would play a limited engagement from Tuesday, January 17th. Through Sunday, April 9th. He is obviously still involved in two TV shows that film in Los Angeles, his game show Let's Make a Deal, and he's also involved with Whose Line Is It Anyway on the CW, so he has to do some things back in California. James, there is absolutely no possible way that I'm going to go to Chicago to see this production, but I kind of wish that my first Aaron Burr was Wayne Brady. I mean, he's so associated with comedic things, and while playing Lola is much more dramatic than probably some things he's done before, I think it's still a huge step up dramatically for him to be playing Aaron Burr. So I'm really, really fascinated to see how he does.
That is really exciting. So Taylor Lauterman is going to be Kinky Boots' new Lauren.
Yeah, in other replacement casting news, yesterday it was announced that Taylor Lauterman would be taking over the role of Lauren in the Broadway production of Kinky Boots on January 16th from Haven Burton. James, you'll remember Lauterman recently exited the off-Broadway musical Ride the Cyclone during previews over creative differences. Obviously, these two things are probably not connected at all, but her leaving that off-Broadway musical made it possible that she could join this Broadway show. Lauterman made her Broadway debut in the lead role in the Broadway production of Bring It On the Musical. She was also Wendy Darling in Peter Pan Live and has done a few other shows around the country as well. So congratulations to her. I think that's a super fun part. That song she sings, what's the name of that song, James? Everybody sings it at cabaret stuff now. The part Lauren sings in Kinky Boots, the steps to step one, I can't remember. It's a great song. I love that song, so I'm sure she'll do great with that one. And then finally, in the show and casting news section, over the weekend, we officially got word that Escape to Margaritaville, the Jimmy Buffett musical, which we've talked about numerous times here, will go on a small national tour before setting up shop on Broadway in spring of 2018. As we've discussed before, the musical will make its world premiere at the La Jolla Playhouse in May, and then it'll go to New Orleans, where it'll start a tour, before it heads out to some other cities that haven't been announced. According to a quote from Mr. Buffett himself, my former boss since I spent 6 months working at Margaritaville at Universal Orlando, he said, quote, "We'll set sail from California on a pre-Broadway national tour, stopping first in the city that gave me my start, New Orleans, then on to some of my other favorites before arriving at that port of all ports, Broadway in New York City." That is definitely something that sounds very much like a Buffett quote, and maybe he'll turn it into a song someday.
All right, so some theaters changed hands as the Ambassador Theater Group expands its portfolio of real estate.
Yeah, this is one that, if you remember, James, this was a story that really got people, especially historians like Jen Tepper, and I think Peter Felicia was really in on this story as well. But there were reports that in Boston, Emerson College's famous celebrated Colonial Theater, which had been an out-of-town tryout home for some of the biggest musicals and shows in Broadway history, was going to close. They were going to turn it into some sort of office building or whatever. There was a huge uproar, and they changed their mind. Well, it's been officially announced now that the Ambassador Theater Group has signed a 40-year lease, and that both Emerson College and the Ambassador Theater Group were going to make substantial capital improvements to the 117-year-old theater, and will explore making the venue available to local performing arts groups in addition to tours and out-of-town tryouts. The company expects to open its inaugural season at the Colonial in January of 2018. Lots of history in that. I'm sure that that Peter will have some thoughts on that. Maybe you guys will talk about it, but either way, I'm sure he's very excited, as I know Jen Tepper is as well.
Yeah, that is really, when I saw the press release come through, I said, wow, Ambassador's really...
They're stepping up.
They're spending a lot of money here.
That's, yeah, well,
really impressive.
Yeah. Well, we talked about last year that they'd gone under some management changes at the top over in the UK, mm-hmm. and then... even before the management changes, they'd purchased the Hudson, but it definitely seems like they're making as many inroads into the U.S. theater community as possible. And it's interesting to me that they are doing it outside of New York, as in addition to just on Broadway and off Broadway. So they do things pretty well over there. They are a money-making machine in the U.K., so hopefully they can do the same for U.S. theater as well.
Absolutely. So while we were recording last night, we gave a little bit of a hint of the beginning of the sweep that La La Land performed at the Golden Globes. So give us the rest of the story.
Yeah, in addition to the ones we talked about yesterday, Gosling, Stone, Pascal, and Hurwitz won for Best Song. Hurwitz also won for Best Score. One of the biggest awards of the night, La La Land won the Best Motion Picture Comedy or Musical Award. The Golden Globes is one of the few that separates the dramas from musical and comedy. But also there were some other things of note that we want to talk about. I hadn't seen it yet because we were recording and I was, you know, working before I got to see it. But Jimmy Fallon actually opened the show with a La La Land parody. If you've seen the film La La Land, the movie opens in with pretty much the exact same song that the Golden Globes opened with, just with altered lyrics. And in the thing that I'm sure if you've been on social media or been reading anything, Meryl Streep, when receiving the Cecil B. DeMille Lifetime Achievement Award, Viola Davis gave a beautiful introduction. And Meryl Streep, despite being somewhat without a voice, gave a very nice speech in which she called for people to avoid bullying and promote empathy. And then, of course, the thing that always happens is she was bullied by a certain unnamed person on Twitter, which we won't get into here. But we will have links to both the opening number and Meryl Streep's acceptance speech in the notes at BroadwayRadio.com. So check those out if you haven't seen them.
All right. Why don't you get us out of here?
All right. Thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio. You can find me on Twitter at BWWMatt and subscribe to Something Like a Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. James, tomorrow we're going to have a little different episode, aren't we? I'm going to be doing the news, but you're going to be doing an interview, right?
Absolutely. So tomorrow, Matt and I have schedules that are opposite of each other. So I'm going to be interviewing Melissa from BroadwayCon, and Matt's going to give us the headlines. So stay tuned for that. And my name is James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. We will both speak with you tomorrow, although separately. So have a great Tuesday.